so still.
Noise. You can turn it down, tune it out, or learn to embrace it. Welcome to Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up later, an artist who never gets noisy. Actress and singer Kristen Chenoweth will share her new memoir with us. But we begin with noise, defined in Webster's Dictionary as a sound, quote, that lacks agreeable musical quality or is noticeably unpleasant, unquote. But over the last century, musicians have sought to harness these senseless and unpleasant sounds and use them as a musical ingredient. From Satie and the Surrealists to punk and grunge to the aptly named noise rock of sonic youth, the use of noise in music challenges what we consider beautiful. Today, in the third part of our Friday series this month that we call Sound Off, we look at ways in which music shapes our lives and noise as well. Joining us is Frank Oteri. Frank J. Oteri is a composer and founding editor of the newmusicbox.org, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And with us as well is DJ Spooky. That's Paul D. Miller. He is author of the book Sound Unbound, Sampling Digital Music and Culture. And Paul, good to have you back as well.
Hey.
Frank, let me ask you first. Let's define our terms. What's music? What's noise? And would your answer be different now if I were asking you this question 100 years ago?
Well, it would definitely be different if you were asking me 100 years ago, although I'd like to think that I would come to the same conclusions. But
you'd be a much more progressive thinker if you were answering this way 100 years ago. So noise
True.
And music.
Noise and music. Well, as we were saying before we started the program, I think you can't really define any of these things objectively anymore. And in a world that has gone beyond the ideas of the futurists, Luigi Russolo and the teens inventing instruments specifically to generate what were called noise sounds, to John Cage opening up the idea that all sounds are potentially music, to a whole genre that's a worldwide genre that's very big in Japan, practiced by people like Marisbo, doing what they call noise music, which...
Noise rock,
And even the term noise music, which to some extent is an oxymoron, because if noise is that which is not music, and music is that which is not noise, what is noise music?
Well, so what is the distinction? How do we distinguish between noise and music? Is it as simple as saying that noise is kind of unstructured and music has some kind of, you know, intent behind it?
Well, you could structure noise sounds. Perhaps it's in the ear of the behearer, as it were. If you cannot hear the structure in it, if you cannot appreciate it aesthetically, then for you, in fact, it's noise.
Right. Paul, I mean, the whole DJ culture, I mean, the aesthetic that drives it is one of cutting and pasting, of sampling, of taking the little shard of sound that might have been musical in one context and making something completely different, basically taking bits of noise and making something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the entry point to that I just heard Frank talk about was the city. I mean, that's the common denominator for a lot of this. I mean, you have to imagine the futurists were responding to the industrialization of the everyday world. I mean, that's something that you have to imagine how loud New York is. If you ever go to Times Square and you realize, like, this year, it's about, if you actually measure the decibels, it's about as loud as a jet engine or something. Like, we grew up, if you think about DJ culture in the 60s and 70s, I'm a child of the 70s and 80s, I guess. But before, you got to remember, jazz was also an entry point for noise. You had Sun Ra with the joyful noise. You had early Charlie Parker, where, you know, this idea of multi-reed flute kind of stuff that was going on also. But at the turn of the 20th century, industrialization, that's where I think the really key phenomenon is, and people looking at the machinery and the kind of density of the urban landscape. I mean, the Eiffel Tower to me is actually visual noise almost on one level, because it's they're on one hand trying to figure out, okay, here's the 20th century, 19th century divide. How does the machine change the way people think about not only the cultural process of production of music, but even if you think about, like, the futurist, Luigi Russolo was dealing with sound. I mean, if you look at The Art of Noise 1915 and compare that to, it's now the 100th anniversary of Marinetti's manifestos. But at the same time that stuff's going on, a lot of the painters, if you look at Cubism and even, like, everybody was trying to figure out industrialization. And
right.
I think that's, noise is somehow when you have that kind of incoherent versus coherent signal process. That's where I think the entry point is.
Well, this is interesting. Can the sounds of nature be noise.
Absolutely.
That is really interesting. But before we veer off into nature after talking about industry, I mean, the sounds of the Industrial Revolution clearly felt in the art, the literature, and in the music of the early 20th century. You guys have both mentioned Luigi Russolo, the futurist composer. Let's see if we can hear a little bit of his music and played on these instruments, Frank, that you were talking about, that were invented specifically to make noises that were not the ones you would expect from quote-unquote conventional instruments. So that is some, yes, music by Luigi Russolo, the futurist composer of the early 20th century. And we're talking about noise, as we've done each Friday this month in our Sound Off series, but today talking about noise as a musical ingredient. And Frank O'Terry, who is the founding editor of newmusicbox.org, and Paul D. Miller, who performs as DJ Spooky, are my guests. And so, Frank, that is a very urban sound. I mean, no New York City dweller is going to be baffled by what they just heard. They may not know that these were musical instruments, but the kind of droning, you know, industrial sounds, we grow up with these. We hear them all around us.
Well, that's true. But, you know, if you live in a rural area and you have a lawnmower, you're going to get a very similar
right.
sound, too. I guess, but once again, that's a machine. Would you get sounds like that in nature? Well, there are some very unusual sounds in nature, if you really listen to it. And it's very telling that one of the key compositions that came out of the New York school of Cage and Morton Feldman and Earl Brown was David Tudor's Rainforest, which is a sonic simulacrum of
a collage almost
of a rainforest.
Yeah.
I mean, to use that title is actually to evoke nature.
Well, I definitely want to jump in and still evoke the jungle motif of Duke Ellington as well, if you think of his stuff, or take the A Train, which is the elevated, was a serious intervention of noise in the New York landscape in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and so on. So definitely, I think the idea of the jungle and the complexity of the sounds that, you know, both David Tudor or Duke Ellington are engaging, I love the fact that we have this idea of how do human beings give meaning to a signal. And that's like, for the 21st century, everything is decodable at this
so
point.
So are we talking about anything that is really, at the end of the day, really different in 21st or even 20th century music from what mankind has done all along? I mean, I think there's this ancient Chinese classical piece called Ambush from All Sides. It's a work for the pipa, the Chinese lute.
Oh, that's right. It's a 7th century piece. Yeah,
and,
it's extraordinary.
And basically, it's attempting to recreate on the strings of the lute the sounds of a battle, of an ambush, of an army being surrounded and stuff.
I'm sure it's on YouTube, man. I wouldn't but, I mean, the idea of giving complexity a kind of interpretive framework, because noise is something at the edge of when you have a sense of giving a coherent sense of interpretation. It's considered decoherent or a signal that's decayed or something that's not within your frame of reference. But once, I think digital media, actually, what I'm really intrigued right now is that everything signals. Even noise is just basically a complex signal. And if you have the right algorithms, it's all decodable.
Mm-hmm.
So
what we consider, I mean, I started by asking you guys, what's noise, what's music? It sounds like that your answer will sort of go hand in hand with the technology that you're used to, with the sounds that your ears have become accustomed to decoding.
Yep.
And in your case, Paul, as DJ Spooky, you recorded this piece called Synaptic Dissonance. Most of us are familiar with the sounds of a modem. We don't necessarily consider them musical. You find it a musical sound. You've decoded it in that mm-hmm. sense.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm pretty sure, I mean, there's one of the first compositions written for turntables, I always chuckle over this, is John Cage, 1939, Imaginary Landscape.
Right.
And it was like punk rock of the era, in the same way that the first futurist compositions were really controversial. The audience jumped up and threw bottles. They said, stop with this noise. People were like holding their hands to their ears. It was, you know, but you actually hear it. It doesn't, for a 21st century ear, it doesn't sound that dissonant per se. But when I was working on my hip-hop stuff about noise, I was really inspired by Public Enemy's Bring the Noise. That's a classic hip-hop track. And it was all about taking small... Public Enemy, when they first came out, was such a revolution because they had this densely collaged and layered... They had the sound of tea kettles, James Brown, you know, bombs falling, you know, all sorts of stuff. And when I'm working on tracks, I guess I'm thinking more in terms of sound and theater. So Synaptic Dissonance, that modem sound at the time, was still a quite everyday object. You know, now you don't... It's all wireless. There's a different frequency going on.
Here's a little bit of the music from DJ Spooky. Music from DJ Spooky, Synaptic Dissonance, and you heard the once familiar sound of the old the modem connection being made. Here used as a musical ingredient, DJ Spooky is Paul D. Miller, author of the book Sound Unbound, Sampling Digital Music and Culture. Also with us is Frank J. Oteri, the founding editor of NewMusicBox.org, and we want to know what you think. Has noise ever inspired you? Is some noise actually musical to you? Does it become kind of an enjoyable part of your day? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or leave a comment on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org, where there are several interesting comments already. And guys, let me read you this one from Liz in Washington Heights. And she's talking about the difference between music and noise. Here's the difference, Liz writes. Context. I live next to a restaurant that turns into a nightclub. Some of the music they play I like. In a different context, I don't enjoy it at 2 a.m. on a Tuesday when my whole apartment is vibrating like a subwoofer. For me, that's when it transforms from music to noise. So a good point, because we're talking about when does noise become music, but the same kind of rationale of what you can decode, what your ear, you know, accepts as music can change with the time of day and where you are and just where you are in your life, right?
That's so interesting. I was going to throw out the word context. It's been on the tip of my tongue for the last 5 minutes. And when you referenced the Chinese pipa piece, I kept thinking of that. There's a French composer, Rebel, who did a similar piece, Chaos, and there was an African-American pianist, Blind Tom Bethune, who did tone clusters in the 19th century to depict Civil War battles. Fascinating stuff. But there, all
tone
those
clusters
sounds,
being when you, like, smash your forearm, yes, or your hand on the keys. And
it's so, a nice way of saying
yes. You know, all sounds, you know, what would be the equivalent in the day of white noise? Before you were able to generate all frequencies, you could at least hit all the keys on the piano. And that's the sound of battle. But once you take away the context for it and say, this has no context, just listen to it as sound, then maybe it's noise. And certainly when somebody like Mersbow throws sound out like that, he doesn't try to explain what it is. In fact, there's sort of an element to not explain what it is.
Is it an element of confrontation? Is he being... when you say Mersbow, he's Japanese, despite,
yes,
the German name.
Yes.
Is he kind of, you know, tweaking his audience's collective nose, or is he trying to expand there? I mean, what's the intent?
Well, that becomes an interesting question, too, because if his audience is fans of this music, is he really shocking them? They know what they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
If you play Mersbow for somebody who's never heard Mersbow, it's noise. If you play Mersbow for Mersbow fans, it's music.
Well, whether you consider it noise or music is up to you. Here's your chance to decide. Paul, I almost heard the same modem sound in that piece by Merzbow.
Well, I guess now I'm really fascinated with info overload, which is the equivalent of informational noise. And you got to remember, in the 20th century, there was a really major development. This guy, Claude Shannon, came up with information theory.
Mm-hmm.
And Norbert Wiener coined the term cybernetics. And they were both trying to figure out how do you manage massive amounts of information. And after World War II, the U.S. military realized that cybernetics was going to be the math form of the future. So Norbert Wiener was up at MIT. They were trying to figure out organizing massive volumes of information moving through the U.S. Networks. At the time, that was you got to remember, the Internet comes out of military stuff. So they needed a network that would be able to survive nuclear war. So being able to send signals if there was a disaster. Amusingly enough, and this is going to be a kind of about networks, one of the guys who invented Muzak, General George Orton Squire, comes out of the U.S. military's telegraph corps after World War I.
So Muzak and the Internet, both coming out as byproducts of the U.S. military.
Yeah, they were sending signals over hundreds of miles, just tapping little, Morse
Morse
stuff.
Code, yeah.
And that's kind of the modem is you're just hearing a 20th century update of the same, kind of just tightly compressed information.
Right.
That's all it is.
The idea of noise in music, I mean, as we've discussed, it seems like a 20th century development. It certainly became a big thing post-industrial revolution. But in the 70s especially, with the beginnings of the kind of current quote-unquote downtown culture in New York, you had artists like Rhys Chatham, who was on our soundcheck program last month, and we took the opportunity after the show to record a little bit more with Rhys Chatham, because he is looked to by the so-called noise rockers and the whole noise music field as a really seminal figure, mainly through the use of his pieces, his composed pieces for electric guitar. And this is what Rhys had to say.
With my piece Guitar Trio, I never considered that noise. The primary vocabulary of Guitar Trio is the harmonic series, and it really has nothing to do with noise. It's noise is music, of course, but it's much more a complex sound. However, with my piece Drastic Classicism, I purposely tune guitars to D, A, D, D sharp, E, D, which is very, very, it has minor seconds in it, and it's very atonal.
Very dissonant,
and
yeah.
The three other guitars in the same intervallic relationships, but one tuned in C sharp, one tuned in D, one tuned in D sharp, and one tuned in E, that is noisy.
And this is what that sounds like. Here's a little bit of that piece called Drastic Classicism by Rhys Chatham. All these guitars tuned very, very close together, producing this kind of wall of noise or music. Again, up to you. Up next, more in our conversation on the role of noise in music, and we'll take your calls and comments as our series Sound Off continues. And then later on Soundcheck, Kristen Chenoweth is best known for her roles in the Broadway hit Wicked and on the TV drama The West Wing. But in a new book, she looks back at her entire career and more. She joins us to talk about it later on Soundcheck.
It's time to trust my instincts, close my eyes, and leap. It's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying.
Is there any escape? Oh, no!
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and like this band, Negative Land, perhaps you've felt that you couldn't escape from the noise around you. Today we're looking at what happens when noise becomes an ingredient in our music. And joining us is Frank J. O'Terry, composer and founding editor of newmusicbox.org, currently celebrating its 10th anniversary, and Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, and author of the book Sound Unbound, Sampling Digital Music and Culture. And we've also got a number of calls on the line, and let's go right to the phones. Greg, joining us from New Jersey. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, well, so we're talking about, you know, we're wrestling with what's music, what's noise. What do you think?
Well, I don't think you really need to wrestle too much with it. Music is really melody, harmony, and rhythm, and combinations of melody, at least, with one of the other two. So if you have those component parts, you can put any sound you want in there, and that usually implies some kind of structure. So it doesn't have to be a rigid structure. It can be a very loose structure, but there's usually some kind of structure involved there. And when you were playing the modem, well, that wasn't music. That was sound, and it could be legitimately used in music. But just sitting by itself, it was just sound. It had no component part unless it was part of a larger piece, and those tones were part of a melody or the harmony or the rhythm or whatever. It's one of the reasons why I never understood why they called rap music. They stopped calling it rap music for a while, and maybe they came back to rap music, I don't know. But I don't listen too much to it. But rap, when I listen to rap with NWA and some of the older guys, to me it was really just poetry to a rhythm, uh-huh. where they threw in some pieces of music. Like I used to hear Eric Clapton guitar riffs thrown in, and somebody else, which made it pretty cool, but didn't have all the structural components of music. It was a new art form to me, which was very cool.
Right, and Paul, this is what you were talking about, exactly what Greg is saying. You know, the kind of old school when Public Enemy came on the scene with all of these clips from classic rock to Sounds Around the House. You know, what did that do to people's conception of what's music and what's noise?
You know, I think Greg has a great point. I mean, you have an uneasy tension between context and content. Okay. With beats and repetition, you got to remember the 20th century. I really think I love Alex Ross's book, The Rest is Noise. It's mm-hmm. great work. But I think there's something that they missed, which is repetition. And repetition versus and giving things a sequence changes the way you hear. If it's random incidental stuff, which a lot of composers were dealing with, what they call stochastics, and like Xenakis, for example, who's right. a composer who's very refined kind of noise. It's mathematics. He's basing it all on ancient Greek stuff. But with hip-hop, what goes on is that people will take things and look at the distilled essence of a rhythm, and they'll try and distill that to make a kind of a structure out of it. So the structure, when Public Enemy revolution, I really think they revolutionized hip-hop in every level. Rap, I mean, that's a whole different thing. But when you look at language and language as a kind of response to how people send information, you can still look at Sun Ra, Bring the Noise, A Joyful Noise. Black culture, Trisha Rose has a great book on hip-hop and noise. It's called Black Noise, which is a history of early hip-hop as well. I mean, there's been, I think, a kind of the hidden architecture of 20th century was the uneasy tension between noise versus repetition. Mm-hmm. But hip-hop just embodies both of those.
You're throwing out so many ideas there. Let me follow up on one of them. Paul is talking about, you know, the architecture. Now, Greg was saying, you know, there's no rhythm or there's no harmony or there's no melody. Maybe, or, you know, there's no kind of structure. Sometimes the structure is a structure that we can't perceive, as is often the case with Xenakis, to use Paul's example.
Well, so it's very interesting. I heard that modem thing, and in my mind, I was thinking about how you would notate it if it was on a staff, and there is a melody. Da, 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 da,
you can notate it.
And, you know, it is a melody. It's a melody, and it has a timbre, and there's a rhythm to it. There's a, you know.
You could notate a car alarm, too.
Well, sure.
Not that
people
want to.
No, ballet mechanic. Hey, you know.
And there are pieces of music for car alarms.
Yeah. In fact, a car alarm is a piece of music. Somebody had to compose.
Somebody did that, yeah.
Even early, like, horns, because, like, the horns used for military alerts, those are really popular in club music, you know, where you go, bah! You know, it's like this James Brown's horns. Those are all considered really noisy. Same with gospel. You know, mm-hmm. That's why, what's his name? Well, Charles Ives was considered controversial because he had this kind of dissonant stuff going on with mixing gospel and classical. I love it. It's collage. That's what just brings
but
it all together.
You said something very interesting about language that I don't want to lose the point of, because this was something else we were talking about. That's another, you know, sort of the sea between music and so-called music, so-called noise, the sea between so-called music and so-called language. You know, language in its essence, it is sound, and there have been tons of composers who have found the music in spoken language, the music in manipulating language. And there are arguments among anthropologists that music and language did have a common ancestor as well. So,
if you ever hear, like, there's a very specific ethnic group. They're not the Zulu. The quiet. They have this sound of clicking noises.
There's a bunch of South African click languages like Xhosa and the Kalahari. And
when you hear that, it's to me it's really bizarre. But like when you actually hear people talking and they make a structure out of it, that's where you get meaning.
If you don't know the language, you can only hear it as music,
right?
Or noise.
Here's an interesting comment from Mary in Dumbo. She writes, "I love the sound that radiates from those small, high-voltage substation buildings you see throughout the city. There is one on J Street in Brooklyn near the apartment complex Concord Village, and every time I walk by it, it sounds like an orchestra tuning up." It really is kind of a question of tuning your ears, which can make all the difference between music and noise.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
The first time I ever heard Korean music, I didn't understand what I was hearing. To me, it was noise. But the first time I heard My Bloody Valentine unleashing a gale of sound in the middle of a song and doing so at bruising volume, it was almost shockingly, ecstatically musical.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
So it really does depend not only on what you're attuned to, but I guess it also depends, Frank, on how evident it is from the performers of what their intent is. Now, we were talking about Merzbow before with all the modem sounds and stuff. And I asked you, what do you think his intention was? With a band like My Bloody Valentine, the intent seemed to be, or with Sonic Youth, same thing. The intent was to kind of, just push it over the edge. It's like we can go so far with these electric guitars.
Or Hendrix.
Yeah. But it's very clear in all those contexts that, they're on a stage, there's an audience, and you see them with their instruments, and they're playing those instruments. So there's already a musical context for them. I was thinking of somebody we haven't touched on at all who died in the last few months, Max Neuhaus, who has this amazing installation in the Times Square area, in Duffy Square, and he insisted that there be no label for it, so that you walk by it and there is this piece of sound art, but there's no context for it, so you hear it as noise unless you know. Mm. And I've been fascinated by this since I was, a preteen, and I had no idea what it was. I was like, oh, that cool sound in the Times Square area, and then later I learned what it was, and I love it.
I love that piece. I mean, when you walk through the city and you realize all those vents coming out where the subway's pushing huge blasts of air, that's like someone playing the city as a trumpet.
Or as a big pipe organ. Curtis is joining us on the line from Darien, Connecticut. Curtis, you have an example of what some might find noise that you find musical?
I do. I'm a swimmer, and I swim laps. And when I get into the pool and I start swimming and the rhythm of the water and the splashing and my breathing, it feels very musical to me, and it sort of keeps me in my cadence, and it makes me swim more steadily, and it makes it a little more, musical.
Wow. Do you do a lot of splashing when you're in the water? I mean, is it noisy when you swim?
It's sort of a garbled, underwater, noisy splash, and you can hear your breathing pretty regularly, and you breathe out regularly, because if you don't, then you have a mouthful of water.
And then you're talking rhythm.
Yeah, well, there's a tribe in Central Africa, in Cameroon, that does water drums. The whole tribe will gather in the middle of a lake, and they play these huge...
They cup their hands. Yeah.
And for them, that's pretty funky water, right?
Yeah. All right, so we've been talking about some of the surprising ways that music and noise intersect with Frank J. Oteri. He's founding editor of newmusicbox.org, and Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid. His book is Sound Unbound, Sampling Digital Music and Culture, and a little bit of Paul's music in the background to wrap things up for us. Guys, thank you both for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Lots of interesting comments as well. Check out the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. And coming up next, Kristen Chenoweth. She's played everyone from Glinda the Good Witch to a White House staff member. The stage and screen star joins us to talk about her new book. And tune in to Soundcheck on Monday when we'll look at the increasing use of pop music and even TV theme songs at funerals. We'll explore the delicate relationship between non-traditional music and religious services, Monday on Soundcheck.